Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
I'm Grace Bonney of After the Jump, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Fun About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Kuzmi, and today in the studio we have Amanda Meyer from Single Cut and Piercedness.
Mayer.
Hey. I do that all the time. I think all the time. But I love you and thanks for coming back
and joining us on the show. I'll take it.
Shucks. Mary is still out of town. She will be calling in hopefully a little bit later or very soon. And what's going on in town? You have a couple of different events happening over at Single Cut.
I do. So the tap room specifically, we have something called a six-string summit where these legends of guitars come in and play on our stage. This Friday we have, the Tronzo Trio. So every Friday night at 8 o'clock we have music. This one is being opened up by Amanda Monaco.
Who I went to college with.
Yes,
and she's
you did.
An awesome guitar
she's
player.
She's an incredibly talented person. Guitar player, yes. And I believe she plays a single cut guitar, if I'm not mistaken.
How apropos.
Yes, right. We also have Nels Klein on June 20th, the guitarist for Wilco. So that's going to be pretty epic. But yeah, every Friday at 8 we have music in the tap room.
That is awesome. The whole theme of Single Cut kind of was born of our idea.
Oh, yeah. So we have our stage up above our tap room and, you know, guitars lining the wall. And, you know, of course, all of our beers are named after musicians. So
it's fantastic. If you are in New York City, check them out no matter what day it is. Actually, what days are you open?
Thursday through Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah. You can find any information on our open hours, singlecutbeer.com.
And this is also American Craft Beer Week, as decreed by the Brewers Association. Today's the first day, so there's lots of events and lots of go out and have some American craft beer this week. There's going to be lots of fun stuff happening, and I assure you, you can find a great American craft beer near you. Love it, support it, drink it. And also, going into next week, I keep mentioning this once in a while. I decreed that next week is it's really just me here. But
so
I kind of planted a flag for New York City Mead Week. And all week at 508, we'll be doing some mead flights with a bunch of different meads. And we will be launching a collaboration that I've done with Michael Fairbrother of Moonlight Meadery. We made a braggot together, a saison, with about 60 pounds of wildflower honey orange blossom honey from Tremblay Apiaries upstate. And I'm really excited to get that on tap and be drinking that.
I can has that.
You can has that. Come on down. And tomorrow I'm releasing a beer called a beer de garde. But also, today is all about taste. Today's show is all about tasting, training your palate, and getting into different things. We recently met a guy at the Craft Brewers Conference named David Selden from 33books.com. Dave, are you around?
I am.
Hey.
Can you hear me okay?
David, I hear you just fine. Thank you. Thanks for calling
in.
So tell us a little bit about the history of 33 Books. You have a great story. I could read it from the website, but it's better in your words.
Yeah, totally. No, I'd like to say I'm a reformed beer blogger. So I think I was one of the first beer blogs in Portland. I started with a bunch of my friends called BSBrewing.com. And I no longer do that, but when we started getting a little bit of notoriety, we started getting invited to tasting events, usually through PR people and stuff like that. And the problem with beer is the next day it was sort of hard to remember everything we tried.
True story.
Yep.
I'm not going to remember 30 minutes from now, so.
We can relate to that. Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm a graphic designer by training, and So I invented this little book to take down notes about the beers I was trying. And lo and behold, a lot of other people really liked it too, and the empire began with that little book. So I'm up to 10 different tasting books now, which is pretty awesome and crazy. I never would have thought about it. That would ever have happened. And I've also developed very, very expensive taste in
It is a fantastic
Not
book.
Not just beer.
Yeah.
I'm a wine snob, a cheese snob, a coffee snob.
Did it start with beer and then move on to that once you started using your own books or tasting in the same way?
It did. Yeah, as soon as the beer one came out, people were like, oh, you should do a blank one. And wine was after that, and then I think it was coffee and then cheese maybe shortly thereafter.
So what is, I mean, I have a book in front of me, but what is the tasting book and why is it better than a regular notebook? What are you giving, or what is it? Tell us what the page is. I mean, I see it.
Yeah, totally.
And why you designed it the way
you did. It's really small. A lot of the journals that I had seen out there previously, and a lot of the ones that are out there even still today, are pretty bulky. I think they're more designed for like at home or something like that, where you put it on a desk and it's, you know, about $40 and wrapped in leather and other dead things. These are not that. they're really small. They fit in your pocket.
Yep.
Yeah, I love this because you're not that asshole at the bar that pulls out their novel.
Exactly.
Which is fine. Yeah, we totally respect that.
I've done that.
Yes, we all did that. Thanks, Amanda.
Yeah, sorry.
Thanks. Guilty.
I'll just be offending people left and right today.
Yeah, but they're not just blank pages in this small. It's not just that it's small in the book. I think one thing that I really love about it is the flavor wheel and what you've done with that, making it. Could you describe that for us and where that was born of?
Yeah, totally. So basically, I really wanted to make it fast to rate things. I didn't want to be like, had to write a novel every time you tried a new beer, because beer festivals, you could be trying 50 beers and you could be writing all day if you're trying to jot that all down. So the flavor wheel is something I saw actually on a TV show. I don't think it's still on, but it's called Three Sheets. It was this guy that traveled all around the world to do different drinking things. Anyway, some brewery, I guess it's fairly common in sensory evaluations for their beer. They use it more for consistency testing. It's a spoked wheel, not unlike kind of a bicycle wheel, but each spoke of the wheel is a different flavor. So, you know, in the beer one, there's bitterness and hoppiness and alcohol.
I'm going to listen down if it's okay. I'm going to go down. So it's alcohol, dark fruit, citrus fruit, hoppy, floral, spicy, herbal, malty, toffee, burnt, sweet, sour, bitter, dry, body, and linger.
I like that.
Yeah, so those are all pretty common flavors. And the idea is you just kind of, in your head, think, oh, does this have a boozy flavor? And if it does, you mark that a little higher. So you put a 5 on that one, and maybe it's a 4 for hoppy or something like that. Just for tasting an Imperial IPA.
right.
Maybe it's fruity, you know. So you just kind of go around, and it's kind of a good mental jog to look for various flavor profiles. But it's also really quick.
Yeah, you rate each one of those on 1 through 5, and that puts you at a different place within the wheel, and then you end up with this spider web picture, which really is just a picture.
I don't know
how to really read those. I'm familiar with that actually means, but it's always fun, and it is a really cool thing. So then you moved on.
Yeah.
So do you what? You said you have 10 different books right now.
I do. I know it's crazy.
What are the other ones?
Yeah. So it's beer, wine. Let's see if I can do this from memory. Cheese, chocolate, coffee, cigars. Whiskey, which is more oriented towards like American and Canadian style whiskey. Scotch is the newest one. There's hot sauce, cider, which is another personal passion. And I must be forgetting one or two there, but you can see them all at the website.
Absolutely.
33cooks.com.
Okay, so you started with beer, and then when you got into the other things, you started tasting and paying more attention. What is tasting to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's just being a little bit more mindful of what you're consuming. You know,
right.
To me, it's never been about like quantity. I mean, I enjoy having a few beers on a hot summer day as much as the next guy. But you know, a lot of these beers, they tend to be kind of expensive. They're made in really small quantities. So I think you kind of owe it to yourself and to the people who make it to really appreciate it. And it's just another tool, I think, to kind of slow you down and help you remember it.
Right.
So you get the experience the first time, but then you know the next time. You can kind of compare your notes.
David, do you brew, or do you?
Do you make it? Yeah, I started in home brewing. It's probably about 10 years ago.
Awesome.
I don't as much anymore because now I have 2 small children, but I still do.
So this sort of thing is very good for you from a sensory analysis sort of way, or to improve your beers and kind of think about where you want to go. To me, there are two kinds. I mean, I say this all the time, and I feel like a jerk for saying it all the time, except I really mean it, and it's really a quote from Duke Ellington about music. There are two kinds of beers. He used to say there's 2 kinds of music. And you know,
I was
like,
about to say, I'm pretty sure Duke Ellington didn't say that.
He was more of a coffee and lemon drinker, and like steak. Anyway, we'll go on from there. And he said, you know, there was the good kind and the other kind. And it's up to you to decide what that is. And so my next question to you is like, you know, has this improved or diminished some of your drinking experiences because we're thinking now too much or a lot about it?
Never too much.
Never too much. I agree.
Sometimes. Like I said, it's hard for me. A better example is probably coffee. Like, I have always loved coffee. The difference now is that I'm no longer satisfied with available in most places.
Right.
So when I travel, I carry my own beans with me and I grind them fresh in my hotel room. And you know, in some ways it has diminished it because I think I pay maybe too much attention to things sometimes. But I think I also get a lot more out of it now. I think the more you know about something, it heightens your appreciation of it.
I fully agree. As much as sometimes I'm mad that I'm thinking about what I'm drinking or experiencing, ultimately I'd rather be doing that and appreciating the good parts about it and why it is and where it came from than blissfully going, you know, ignorance is bliss, which is pretty nice too sometimes.
It can be.
Hey, when I'm pounding Coors Light, that's ignorance is bliss.
You don't do that.
No, never.
So,
it can be frustrating. I mean, you try an IPA sometime, and you're like, oh, boy, there's a lot of DMS in this, and you sound like just a jerk, and everybody else around you is trying to have a good time. But
Yeah.
I think by and large,
it's good.
Yeah, I agree. I think your book is really great. So it leaves room for comments and your own thing. And then when you're thinking about comments or notes, a lot of times I think when it comes down to tasting anything, vocabulary is a very big thing. And being able to associate taste with words, being able to infer from your experience, which is another reason why these books and taking them over or, you know, jotting your notes down is a very important thing. And I feel like your palate, having started all these other books, has improved your tasting of beer and given you a wider vocabulary for how it pertains to beer. Would that be a correct assumption?
Yeah, I think so. I think what I've learned more than anything is that I think when you start approaching, like, you know, more formal beer tasting and somebody says something has like hints of cassis or something to it, I used to look at that and think, oh my gosh, that's ridiculous, but this beer doesn't taste like cassis, it tastes like stout, you know. And I guess when you experience that flavor across other things, because I'm not going to continue with cassis because it is kind of a ridiculous flavor something like tropical fruit, like, no, this coffee doesn't taste like pineapple, but it sort of tastes like the memory of pineapple.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It recalls pineapple. I think that's the biggest takeaway, is that it's really about, you know, making personal associations with something. This beer reminds me of that time I was in Mexico with my fiance, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what you think is pineapple, I might think is like mango chutney or something like that. So it's different for everyone.
Sometimes it's who says the words first to other things. You might not be tasting anything first,
right?
And then somebody says it, and then it's like, oh, yeah. And then you can't find your own definition for that particular taste that somebody else named. Like the other day, I was drinking a cider from Transylvania, actually.
Wow.
Transylvanian yeast that somebody brought back at a bottle shop in Spain.
Please tell me it had a vampire name.
I forget what it was. Oh. I forget the vampire name, but it had vampires on the front for sure.
Yes.
Absolutely did. You know, it was very bloody and gothic kind of front, and it tasted, somebody said marzipan, and it tasted like marzipan. I could not get it out of my
You were probably tasting marzipan for the whole rest of the day, too.
Yeah, everything. Absolutely. But it absolutely did have that. So what's next for the 33 books? Do you have other ones in the plan? And how has the business been going?
It's been going great. I like to say I'm a drinker with a design problem. I sort of can't stop making these things. So I have this new thing. Actually, it's funny you mentioned. I forgot it was American Craft Beer Week this week. So I made this giant poster. It's called the United States of Beer. It's almost 40 inches wide and 2 feet tall, so that's pretty large. And it's a map of the United States, and the premise is you would taste a beer from every state in the country and rate it as you go. So it's sort of an interactive poster. It's sort of based on the beer book itself. So there's a little flavor wheel in Rhode Island and one in Vermont and so on. The goal is to try a beer from every state. So
I love that. Just to support the states. I mean, right now we have more craft breweries than more breweries in the United States than we ever had before. And to really get into that and know them from everywhere is a very fun thing and a fun thing to encourage, which is why I also like, you know, different states sometimes have their beer passports for like going to visit and check off the list of all the breweries in the state. And I think actually New York State is thinking about starting that right now. The Brewers Association is that. Or the New York State Brewers Association. I think we're thinking about trying to start one of those.
I hope so. New York is blowing up.
Yeah.
Right place.
I think it's cool that even like, you know, Alabama and Arkansas have like a growing and sort of healthy beer appreciation community. It's astounding and awesome. I think it's really cool.
Well, it was just Alabama a couple months ago, right, that just overturned the home brewing law? Arkansas?
Yeah.
Alabama.
It was Alabama. I could be wrong. I think it was both of them at the same time.
Then everything Jester King did with Texas and stuff. So I like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm the designer, so it's a little hard for me to talk about how beautiful it is, but I'm really proud of it. It turned out awesome. It's on really cool, thick, dark paper. It's got some cool metallic inks. And just, it looks awesome on it.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
Where can we see it and where can we get it?
It's all at the website, 33books.com, and then a growing number of retailers are carrying it too. In New York, Top Hops has it right now. I'm trying to think.
Top Hops, is that?
Oh, there's an Inc.
Top Hops.
Yeah, Top Hops.
There in Manhattan. Where are you living? Where are you from?
I live here in Portland, Oregon. Sunny, actually. Today it's balmy 80 degrees,
or not. And now we're talking about the weather. Well, David, I do have to go. We're going to go. We have a break to have. And thank you so much for joining us on For Men About It. This is an awesome book. I recommend it to everybody to get. And we're going to talk more about tasting and how to develop your palate with Amanda Mayer in the next session.
Way to go.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, David.
Bye, David.
Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to For Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're now joined by our co-host, Mary Izette. Mary, how you doing?
Woohoo!
Hey, Mary.
Hey.
I'm sorry we missed you in the first session. David says hello, and he missed you, too. That's what I know.
I listened to it, so.
Fantastic. Any commentary on that? I'm sorry we can't talk to David now.
I know. No, I was just going to say, I thought that his books, not only are they useful, so when I first was studying for the beer judging certification exam, you know, I wrote everything that I tasted between when the classes started in February to when I took the test in June. I wrote down every notes on every beer that I drank. And if I had a book like this, it would have been a whole lot easier.
Yeah, I mean, so I think it's how many times can you...
And that's what he was speaking to, for sure.
I think it's a great learning tool if you're, you know, you want to learn more about your palate and about, you know, styles of beer or cigars or whatever. Anytime, you know, we're kind of taking on something new, like you want to learn more about cheese and you want to learn more about what you like in cheese, not necessarily what is popular, but what you like, then the best way to do it is to get one of these books and start taking notes. And you then, you know, by the end, in a few months, I think, or after X number of cheeses, you'll know, hey, if I go, you know, to my fancy cheese store down the street, I know exactly what I like. I know, you know, what I would like to maybe serve it with. And I don't know. I just think they're great tools. I think they're also would be good tools for breweries to use as well, or brew pubs. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, your guests could, you know, keep one just for your brewery or brew pub and take notes and, you know, learn that way too. So I think they're super cool little books, and I'm dying to find the hot sauce one. I'm going to order it if I don't find it in New York City. That's my next goal, is to, you know, get to know hot sauces a little bit more intimately.
Yeah. The fact that they're pocket size and there's only 33 pages, it makes it very easy and convenient to bring around.
And I did hear you guys mention Alabama beers, and I will have to say that I am currently in Atlanta with some family time, and when I was in Tennessee a week ago, and I actually picked up a six-pack of cans of IPA that are made in Alabama, so I was very impressed.
Awesome.
Yep, and I'm currently drinking a can of the French Broad Brewery Kolsch, Gateway Kolsch from Asheville. It's very nice. I love all this canned beer. Anyway, back to tasting.
back to Nashville, or back to Tennessee.
Yeah,
where are you coming from, Amanda?
I just came from Memphis. This last weekend, there was a Taste of the Rarity. It was a beer festival hosted by Wiseacre down in Memphis, and it had kind of everybody's crazy beer that they brought along. There was Three Floyds, of course, was there, and you know, Bosco and Wiseacre, of course. And then we were there. We brought our Kim and our Mad
Kim
Michael.
Is awesome. Tell us about Kim.
Kim is amazing. That, I believe, is Brian Dwyer's brainchild. Mm-hmm. And it's a sour lager brewed at 4.2% ABV, I believe. Made with hibiscus and blackcurrant. It's a sour mash lager, just really crisp and tart and refreshing and effervescent, and it's a beautiful beer, and people loved
it. When you started tasting beer or getting into beer, mm-hmm. did you like that style of beer?
No. Well, actually, oddly enough, my first sour, Delirium Tremens was my first love, but my first sour love was Rodenbach Grand Cru, which is, you know, wretched to most people's palates at the beginning because it's, you know, very vinegary, mm-hmm. I guess, to, you know, somebody's normal palate. I started with IPAs first, oddly enough, and then went to sours. And I always, everyone, like, who comes into the brewery, into the tap room, they're like, "Ooh, no, I can't do sours." I'm like, just give it a couple weeks. You'll get there. Mm-hmm. Everyone gets there eventually. It's a beautiful style. You can do it so many ways.
And when you started into beer, were you proficient in wine before?
No, wine, absolutely not. My my roommate is really into wine, and so she schools me on most things.
I'm asking because Rodenbach Grand Cru to me is like kind of a crossover for red wine drinkers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's aged and you get the wood and the oak.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I mean, when sours were becoming a thing, I don't know, I guess they became like crazy trendy a couple years ago. I was working at Alewife in Long Island City.
Where you trained me as a bartender.
Where I trained you as a bartender for a hot second. So bless your heart.
Yes, thank you.
You know, customers would come into the bar, they're like, you know, "I'd really like that that wine beer." I'm like, "I have no idea what you're talking about." You know, like, it's like really, it tastes like vinegar. I'm like, "Oh, you want a sour, sweet." So, you know, that's kind of what they associate with that, is it's the wine of beer.
So I'm trying to bring us to, you know, when you were training your palate, how you came to appreciate that, or, you know, what was your approach to tasting? You're a Cicerone.
I am a certified Cicerone, yeah.
And you're teaching Cicerone classes. And what is your approach to teaching people about tasting?
Well, for me, the most important thing, and this is what I always tell my students in the first class and in the last class, is
trust yourself. Because I've been, I guess I've been in the beer industry, I suppose, for about 14 years now. My first job was at 17. I was working in an English pub in England, hence the English pub. and so I've been tasting beer for a while, and it's at some point you just kind of go like, oh, okay, I know this flavor. I know this, you know, this pininess comes from my childhood, and I just kept recognizing it in beer. And so, you know, the further on you go into your studies, if you want to become a Cicerone or BJCP judge or, you know, just an enthusiast, step one is to trust yourself. I get so many people that come up to me in the tap room or in my classes or just, you know, I don't know, on the street or a bar. They're like, yeah, I just don't know what I'm tasting. I'm like, yes, you do. If that's caramel you're tasting, it's caramel. If it's toffee you're tasting, it's absolutely what you're tasting. For me, step two is learning the ingredients. So yes, you are tasting grapefruit, but why? Yes, you are tasting butterscotch, but why? And why is that bad? So things like trust yourself and know where those tastes are coming from. That's where I came from. And that's how I teach my students is teach them the basics first. And then we, you know, throw them in the water without floaties, and
right.
I make them tell me what they taste.
Do you, when you taste with the Cicerone, are you following BJCP guidelines? Are you going beyond that and going with the Brewers Association guidelines for the World Beer Cup, etc.?
I personally,
or is there a starting point?
I do both, only because they read differently. Mm-hmm. BJCP is a lot easier to read, like they put those guidelines out there. You understand exactly what is in your mouth. You know what you're tasting or what you should be tasting at the very least. With Brewers Association, I don't want to say loftier, but it's definitely different guidelines. It's not as specific. I don't even think that they have examples on the BA guidelines.
I just saw them the other day based on some talks I had with
good.
People giving feedback. From
I hope that they do that because, you know, it's so hard for, you know, and the same thing when I try and teach people like what a mash tun and what a lager tun is I can tell you all day what happens in there, but unless you actually like see examples of what that is, you can't put two and two together. So I love that BJCP guidelines does the examples because then you can go out and you can buy that and be like, oh, this is, you know, nutty and toffee, not caramel. I get it now. It makes sense. So,
before we go back to you, Mary, because I want to hear, you know, what you would say with all this stuff. We kind of threw out BJCP and threw out Cicerone without defining them. BJCP is Beer Judge Certification Program. And in your words, what is Cicerone Program?
Cicerone Program is for those who love beer in the service industry. Mm-hmm. So beer and food pairing, keeping and serving beer is really important, but it also works in tandem with BJCP in the sense that you have to study very diligently beer styles, history, tasting, off flavors, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
Mary.
Yep. I was going to go back to when Amanda was talking about, you know, how you teach people to trust themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that is important. One of the things is that our taste is very, and smell is very linked to our memory, the memory part of our brain. And one thing I think a lot of people have a hard time with, even now I do personally, is that when you taste something, you're kind of in a setting, right? But you kind of have a preconception of what you're going to taste. And it's really hard to just let go and kind of do a free association. So, oh, what do I smell? What do I taste? And just let your mind go free. And that's the way to really get what you're tasting and smelling is, you know, it reminds you of like, oh, that pine forest, you know, that was behind my house when I was little,
yeah.
Or, you know, my favorite caramel when I was 10 years old or whatever. So I think it's absolutely, that is extremely important is to, you know, for people to trust themselves and really just to let, you know, kind of don't overthink it, really just feel it.
Yeah, yeah.
David alluded to memory too, and that was awesome. And
yeah.
And also, as far as trusting yourself, one of my favorite quotes from the guy who used to host a lot of the Cicerone programs here, Samuel Merritt, who now is in Las Vegas, he used to say, you know, palates are like fingerprints. Everybody's got one.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, trust yourself. And everybody's different. And what's good to me is not.
It is. And that's why I love tasting beer in groups. Because even when, you know, this weekend when we were down at the festival, Brian Dwyer was with me, a brewer at Single Cut, who I also teach the Zymergy sessions with. We have both extremely opposite palates. So he can smell, you know, diacetyl from a mile away, but it takes me a while. Or, you know, isoamyl acetate to me tastes like bubblegum, but it tastes like banana to him. So it's also important to, you know, it's beer. It should be fun. Like, you should enjoy it with other people. And, you know, it doesn't need to be a douchey experience. Like, it should be fun. And you
it's
should talk about it. It's not a competition. Like, it, you know, if you don't taste like, you know, bitter chocolate from the roasted barley, then that's okay. You know, you're not a horrible beer drinker. You're still getting drunk. So it's all good. But as long as you can like talk about it and have a conversation, and that's what I loved about judging with the NHC is like you guys have partners at with BJCP, right? At all of the competitions.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Judges those solo, yeah.
Yeah, like my partner, for example, he gave a beer, I don't know, a 34 or whatever, and I gave it a 44. I'm like, oh shit. So like we talk to each other, and you create a conversation whilst having beer, and it's, you know, everybody's palate is different. Neither one is right.
But going back to vocabulary and palates, like you said, you know, banana, isoamyl acetate tastes like banana to you and bubblegum to Brian.
Yeah.
Yet bananas are bananas. So what is it in bananas and bubblegum? What are those things that are different? That what, you know, what are the words for those that make them not bananas for him and bananas for you?
Yeah,
you know what
I'm saying? I mean,
that's a conversation that's interesting and really dissecting.
Yeah, I mean, in beer terms, in large quantities, isoamyl acetate, which is an ester that yeast creates, will taste like bubble gum. So to some people's, you know, olfactory glands, it will be perceived as very strong. Whereas, you know, Brian only tastes banana because it's at that lower threshold of, you know, perception. Same thing with diacetyl, which is an off flavor in yeast or an infected line. Some people taste, you know, movie theater popcorn or butter, butterscotch in large quantities. So, you know, everybody, and, you know, you can have the, I don't know, for Columbus is always going to taste resiny, but how resiny is it going to smell or taste to you? So, so there's also that level as well, level of perception, what it's going to taste like in large quantities, what it's going to taste like in smaller quantities. So,
yeah, and everyone has a different threshold. Like, even, you know, Chris and I have very different thresholds in certain compounds. So some people will be very sensitive and less sensitive, like you were talking about. So, absolutely.
Yeah, I was just recently studying with Ann Becerra, Ginger Man, who is my sweetheart and my hero and all in one. And she was saying that you guys were studying off flavors, and you smelt or tasted something completely different than her, and it just doesn't matter what your experience is. You know, somebody off the street could taste or smell butterscotch, and you could smell or taste something completely different as an experienced drinker.
And that's the banana isoacetate.
But you just have to trust what you're smelling or tasting.
The important part is paying attention and doing it. You will do yourself a good service by doing so, and you know, take these notes. When you're out.
When it makes it. Yeah, it makes it easier because then you learn what you like, too, and what you like in certain situations or with, you know, if you're drinking a beer or a wine with food or, like I said, you're selecting a cheese, it's really cool to know what you like. And then also when you know what you like, then you can share that, you know, love with other people,
too. Yeah.
That's what I think is cool about, you know, getting to know your palate.
This is the whole reason there are, you know, there when back when there were music stores, there were different sections in the music stores, you know, so you could go in and be like, you know, I actually feel like IPAs. Even if you're totally foreign to whatever's on the board, you can go in and do that. But also by training your palate, it'll make you a better brewer. It'll make you, no matter what you're fermenting or whatever you're making, like these things help you just sharpen your senses and sharpen how to get to where you want to be.
Yes.
And so hopefully this episode was inspiring to that regard.
Yep.
The point
I also want to just mention
notes.
A resource real quick since it is American Craft Beer Week. If you go to craftbeer.com, which is produced by the Brewers Association,
yep.
under the beverage section, they have a tasting page, and they have a handy printable tasting at home guide, as well as tasting mats, and some really nice videos. Julia Hers has a very nice video on the basics of tasting beer. So I think that's a really great resource that's out there.
Yes.
All right.
And well, if any of you New York people want to take a class to gain either BJCP's certification, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Or Cicerone mm-hmm. certification, myself and Brian Dwyer of Single Cut, we teach something called Zymergy Sessions.
How often do you teach these classes?
Well, we just finished up our inaugural session. It was 10 weeks long.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly...
As it is.
Intensive.
There's
yes.
lots out there to do.
There's
it.
Lots out yeah. there to teach, lots out there to drink. We'll be starting again in late June, and it'll probably be about a 7 or 8 week course.
Where can we find out more information about that?
ZymergySessions.com or on singlecutbeer.com.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see you Friday for the concert with yes. Amanda Monaco.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be awesome.
Thanks for calling in, Mary.
Great.
Bye,
I'll be
Mary.
Back in the studio next week. We're going to have a fast fermentation show lined up for you next Monday.
So I'm psyched about that. She's been fermenting down. She's traveling and fermenting. It's awesome. There's lots of good stuff.
Yeah, I brought a travel fermentation kit with me. Tamper yeast and hydrometers go through security, no problem.
What a woman! It's my kind of woman.
Ferment about it. Thank you, everybody.
Ferment
about it. See you next. Hear you. Talk to you next Monday.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.